Accession number 17733, Reel 2.
Frank Judah, Reel 2. You were just telling me why you weren't worried about conducting bomber operations.
Right, well, the colours and the crew, different atmosphere on the bomb squadron. You just carried on and pressed on.
Do you think that the conversion course onto heavy bombers was a good one? Did it do the job properly for you?
Exactly, yes. I think that the course is more or less really for the pilots to convert onto flying four-engine planes rather than, say, two. The wireless operating was near enough the same, but you still had more, a bit more to do, obviously, you know. So everyone in the crew got to know each other more before going on the proper operations.
Which squadron were you posted to?
It posted to a 158 squadron, which was based at Lytton, 4 Group in Yorkshire.
Where is Lytton?
Lytton is near Bridlington in Yorkshire.
What kind of facilities did that airfield have?
Well, this has had all the facilities for bombing operations. From there, we were really on the main bombing of Germany. And we completed 5 operations from Lytton in Halifax bombers.
Do you remember your first operation?
I do. I think it was Dortmund. My bug book's in.
It says Stettin.
Stettin. Stettin.
Do you remember that?
Not really, no. Just an operation to me at that time.
Do you remember any of these early operations with 158?
Not really. They were all like... they were all interesting to... bomb and see all the chandeliers and flares going up, etc. And the ACAC passing your aircraft and puffing in front of you, you know. It just never hit you at all, you know, just carried on.
Can you say what a chandelier was?
A chandelier is a TI, target indicator marking, with the Pathfinder Force used to drop over the target.
What did they look like?
They're all different types of colours. Yellow, green, white. And apparently they were dropped by the Pathfinders at certain destinations and at certain times.
Did the Germans also use them in bombing?
I don't, over here, I don't think they did, no. I've never seen that, no. I think they gave it at certain times and certain destinations so that the jelly could make their own up and drop them to confuse us.
When you were going off on a raid, can you take me through what would happen from start to finish, starting with a briefing and so on?
Yeah, sure. We had our briefings generally, depending on the target and the time of takeoff, in the afternoon of the raid, our briefing, say 3 o'clock, 3 p.m. Then we go back to our huts, so... billets.
What would happen on the briefing?
Well, on the briefing, each section leader came up and gave you a lecture or information on the raid, what's going to happen, what's going to be. They give you the target you're going to bomb, pilots tied, they're going to fly, and different things, one thing, the navigation leader, he'd come up and give his information to his navigators, the signals leader, he'd get up and give information on what to expect and what frequency to use and what not to use. The gunnery leader would get up, and then the intelligence officer would get up, tell you about what to expect over the target, the guns and the flak. And that last of all, generally the intelligence officer came in and he gave you information on what to look out for. Guns at certain areas and drones in certain areas and one thing and all that. And he'd also get the main one from the station commander probably, or the group captain, someone come along and give you the target area to the target, the markings to the target, with how to fly there, how to fly back, speed, etc., etc.
Would the briefing take a long time?
Briefing generally lasts roughly about an hour.
Could you ask questions?
Ask any question you want. That's the idea of it, really. Ask any question at all, what you want to ask.
Did you normally ask a question?
Now and again, but no, in most cases, like the WALS operator knew what he had to do, really. Different with the pilot or the navigator, you're going over different areas and different types of things. And, you know, now and again, I'd ask a question.
What type of thing might you ask?
Well, such as if we were diverted, what to expect? What kind of message would we get for the diversion? Or you get a recall message to come back home, you know, or land at a certain room. Things like this, you know.
What's a recall?
A recall is when the operation is cancelled. And if you don't get that, you go on and try and bomb the target, you get shut down, wouldn't you? So you'd have to be listening on certain frequencies to find out whether you're going to be recalled or not.
What would a V-call sound like?
A V-call, they've got special signals for it, but coded messages for it, in most.
Was it easy to get the signals, to receive the signals?
It wasn't, no. You have to span the dial and get your high frequency. Get near it, you'd be a little bit off. Atmospherics would come in. You have to be on the job all the time, listen intensely. And what would happen then is the group, that's group signals, would send messages out, say, every quarter of an hour, past the hour, and quarter to the hour. You'd have to listen in to them to see if there's any message on them frequencies and times.
Now, coming back to taking me through an operation, you said you'd have the briefing, and then what would happen after that?
You go back to your bullets, mopes around. You go down for... You'd have a meal before you took off. Generally, chips and eggs or something like that, but never been before to call. Tea and things like this. Then after that, you'd say your report, say down to the flight, say 8 o'clock in the evening. Your take-up might be 10 o'clock, but you report down to the what you call the flights, say about 8 o'clock at night, and all the crews. You meet each other down there, and that's about this and that and that and this, you know. You'd be given all your signal codes, etc., to the WALS operator. The pilot would be given this, and navigator would be given this. Each section would have their own dish out of what they want to take with them. You used to get a flask of coffee to take with you. Escape kit, you used to get an escape kit given to you. Maps, money, such things as all established to keep you going, you know, if you crash landed or bailed out. And from there, you go into the locker rooms, put your flying kit, etc., etc., on, pick your parachute up, sign for your parachute, etc. Then you used to have suction lorries to take you to the dispersal unit where your aircraft is housed. One important part I've missed out at the moment is during the afternoon, each aircraft will go out to the aircraft that's going to fly in that night and test everything. I would test my wireless. The navigator do some testing on his side, power do checking the engines, etc., etc. And all that would be done before, obviously, you took off for the briefing. So you sure the aircraft was in good serviceable order.
How would you test the wireless?
Pardon?
How would you test the wireless?
Oh, you're testing the wireless down again, yeah, sure.
But
yeah.
How would you do it?
A bit of Morse code. I think that's one of the reasons why I think the Jerry knew when we were on a raid that night and they got all of these noises on the wireless. I heard this later, obviously, you know. But he didn't give it like a big, you know, a long message out, you know, just test it with a station.
So you just transmitted?
Transmitted slightly, yeah, slightly transmitted. Mm. And received, obviously, you know. Mm. You see the message, you know, to a station. Put your white receiver on. Mm. Well, I only learned this after the war, really, about the Germans. There's a big raid on, and you got 800 aircraft come testing the things.
And then what happened next?
We were driven out to the aircraft. We all had our equipment with us. The pilots know the time of takeoff, approx. They went about positions in the aircraft.
And once you were sitting in the aircraft, what would happen then?
The pilot generally called up for takeoff instructions. Or the tower would call the pilot up, tell him your turn to move off, you know. Say, hey, Apple, you know, start taxiing for takeoff. It's actually to the end of the runway when he got the call sign to do so. When he got to the end of the runway, he had a caravan at the end with an air crew chap working in there with an oldest lamp. if you got a green front on him, the pilot could go, move off, take off. Obviously, if he couldn't, the red had come up, he wouldn't be able to move off, you know. And just took off in turn this way.
Mm. Was it like a takeoff in an airliner today? Or are there any differences?
No, a bit like the same today, really. Must be, yes, yeah, it is, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then once you're in the air, what happened then?
Once you're in the air, that's it. You really should be, your WT, whilst having silence, RT silence, really. And all you've done then is, me being the wireless op, you couldn't transmit a message in Morse while the pilot wants to speak or any of the crew members want to speak to you. Because they don't want to hear Morse in their ears. They don't understand them anyway. So I'd have a little switch and switch over and I could send a message out if I wanted to and they wouldn't hear that. But normally you wouldn't, WT silence, you don't send nothing out. He wouldn't anyway, but the pilot sent me to. What he says is he's like the captain of the plane, isn't he? And we just take off. WT silence, RT silence, just crew talking to each other when it's necessary.
What type of things would you be saying to each other?
Well, Danny Pyle would be talking to the rear gunner, Ted. Hello, Ted. How are you? You're comfortable, not too cold. You're saying that to all the crew, really, in bits of turn, you know, not all at once, obviously. And if anyone had to say important, you could butt in. But he was such a good pilot, he was really experienced. You'd only speak to the pilot when it's really necessary. You don't, when I've seen due respect to the Americans, I've seen a plane, I mean, something bell, and that plane, all the crew were talking to each other, talking about the night out, the night before, nothing like that went on. In the RDF, you only spoke when you can say in the crew and your lives of the crew to get to that target and get back again. You know, different altogether. That's all, and the navigator might say, or the pilot might say, navigator, how far are we from so and so, and how far to the target? Are we on the right route and one thing and another? Mostly at that stage of flying, it was the pilot and the navigator in touch with each other. when you get near target, the bar member came over into it then, you know. Was everything ready, Ted or Benny, whatever his name is, and yeah. And when he got over the target, on some raids I used to have to go behind to the back of the aircraft and throw what you call window out. You've already heard of this window, haven't you? The 31st Squadron was on the first raid to Hamburg. I was on the first raid on this window throwing out. It's supposed to interfere with the radar.
How would you throw that out? What exactly would you do?
I would put an oxygen bottle on my back. Unclip from the wires and everything. An oxygen bottle on the back. You know, you strap to your parachute between your legs here. Go to the rear of the aircraft and lift the little flap up and throw them down the chute. Done as quick as possible, you know. And when you've done that, you've got to get back quick, obviously, you know. You've got to have oxygen. Because you need an oxygen at any height over 12,000 feet. And normally we'd bomb at about 20,000. You should throw this window out.
Was it in packets?
Yeah, but I just split the packets up. Cut the packets up, break them up and just all out. And get back to my place as soon as I could, as quick as I could. Take the oxygen bottle off. Plug into the proper one and plug in my wireless and my headset and everything like that, and that was that. So we were on the first raid to use us the window, 35 Squadron. It was Hamburg.
And what would happen over the target?
Over the target? The bomber had more to do then with the pilots over the target, giving them courses to steer left, left, to right, right, 2 degrees, 1 degree, etc., etc. And then when they'd over the target, they used to, as the bomber dropped his bombs, but he was in the front, looking at the target down below. When he dropped his bombs, the teak bombs, they used to send off a photo flash at the same time. So when the bombs went, the photo flash went at the same time at the aiming point, and you knew exactly how far they were away from the target.
What did it feel like when the bombs were released?
Heavenly, good. Well, you felt a lot safer, obviously. You'd got a load off the plane and you wouldn't explode and nothing like that. And the quicker you had that target area, the better. And that's what the pilot generally used to do. The nose down, get the course for home before he bombed the target, so he's ready for turning on what course to turn on. Dump the bombs, photo flash at the same time, and away we go home, you know.
Was there a sensation as the bombs were?
Exactly, yeah. Your plane went up a little bit, you know, as if it dropped, you know, something left, and it felt a lot easier. The plane moved a lot better, a lot better.
What would you be able to see of the target yourself?
Well, at that stage, I was only having the earphones, so I could look out the side window, and I could practice seeing nearly all the target. You'd see all the fires burning, and where the pathfinders had dropped the target indicators, etc., different colours.
Did it look dramatic?
It did look dramatic, very dramatic. And you get, looking out the window, you got plenty of flak, puffs of smoke outside the window. And you could get caught in the searchlight. The searchlight over the target area was so colossal. They had hundreds of them, you know. They had different coloured ones, main ones and this one, you know. If you get in the main one, you get a job getting out of it, you know. Really, job getting out of it.
Could you see smoke or smell smoke?
Smoke, oh, you could see smoke. You see it mostly in the smell. See it, yeah. You see it, yeah.
What did the flak look like as it came up?
Just like puffs of black smoke outside the window. You couldn't hear much of a bang, not really, you know.
And then what was the flight back like?
Well, the flight back was the pilot had his course to see you back to base, etc. He It was a pleasure. It was a pleasure, really, because you were getting away from the talk and getting away from everything. And yes, and you know, my little did you know, a lot of our planes were shot down coming from the Saugus, coming back home. Say over Holland or Belgium or France, away from the Saugus.
Did you ever get any cheering or high spirits in the plane?
Now and again, especially when we've done a Berlin raid, you know, we said we'd like to get the Berlin raid done over with, you know. Yeah, I used to get that, yeah.
What would happen then?
Well, some would say, oh, well, that's not finished with Berlin, and, you know, just these things, you know. But we never used to do much of that. As I say, the Americans were all off for things like that. We weren't, we, you know, I don't know what it was. We more kind of more serious about it.
And once you got back to England and started to land, what happened then?
You got picked up by a truck, take your parachute in with you, all your documents, etc., etc. You go to a briefing table where they'd be waiting for you, the intelligence officers, and they would debrief you on the raid, what happened.
What would they ask you?
Well, mostly the pilot asked most of the questions, you know. What was the raid like? Did you hit the targets? Did your photo flash go off? Were the Pathfinder flares on track? Was on the right, you know, track? I'm not on Pathfinders now. I'm on 158 squadron, you see, on this raid. Did you see any of our aircraft getting shot down? Was the flak heavy? Was many fires burning? Did you see any fighters? Many searchlights, give them all this information and the times. Each one went to their own section, like wireless, pilot, navigator, bomber, gunnery. So. After interrogation, did have a breakfast with a meal ready for you. Then the same old bacon and egg and chips, bacon and egg. You go and have a meal. From there, you go and get a shower, etc., etc., and go back to your village. This would be about, 4 o'clock in the morning, but most trips be about 4 o'clock in the morning.
Would you go to sleep?
Well, you try to. You try to. You didn't really sleep. You wait for the next operation coming up. Yeah. You go to bed, obviously, you know. You stay there at about 9 in the morning, 5 hours, and you report back to the flights then. See if there's any operation on for that day.
Would you have nightmares about the trip?
No, not then. No.
On the trip itself, how much transmitting and receiving were you doing?
Hardly any. WT silence. I'll be taking messages down from if group sent a message, which they very rarely did, like recoils. Hardly any on a trip. No, hardly any. On bomber command. Now, it varied when and on to Pathfinder for us.
In what way?
Well, on Pathfinder Force became into use, or into being, obviously, for one reason. The main reason was, if you have 1,000 aircraft on a bombing raid, which you did have, as you know, and you got 1,000 navigators picking their own target, but no one's the same. So you're going to get 1,000 navigators all given different courses, different bomb aiming targets. Now, if you had, say, 50 aircraft with navigators, pilots, wireless operators and air gunners, were well up on what they were doing, given extra training, and then 50 aircraft took off to bomb a target, they would be right on that target. Now, if then 50 aircraft dropped their flares, their TI markers, on the target, so that the 950 bombers, the main force coming in after you, they bombed your flares, that target would be hit. And that's the idea why Pat Patterson fall. Because the early part of the war, you get, say, 600 aircraft going on a raid, and only, say, 50 aircraft had reached that target. They're bombing all different places. Due respect to the navigators on them planes. So that's why pathfinders came into being. So the idea was, pathfinders, I should do more training on a pathfinder course than on a training unit. Very, very important, that part. Honestly. And not many people know, you know. They've got a good idea, but they don't really know. And that's why I came into being in pathfinder course. And when they're going over to DL, they're getting lost, even go getting to the target. Not bombing it, getting to it. So when you're in pathfinders, you drop a flare at certain turning points, different colours, different times, so that bombers come in, the main force bombers come in after you, and see them flares and colours, and say, right, we're on track.
And so how was your job as a wireless operator so different on Pathfinder Force
right.
from the earlier squadron?
Right. Well, what used to happen is if you're on Pathfinder Force and say there's 50 aircraft on a raid and say 950 main force bombers coming in after you, the 50 Pathfinder bombers, the navigators, get the wind. Find out the strength of the wind in the aircraft. You could do this. They give me a coded message, the wireless operator. I'll take the message off the navigator, and I would transmit that message back to group in England. They would pick my message up, the strength of the wind, etc., etc., and they would transmit that message out every 15 minutes past the hour, and 50 minutes to the hour to the main force. And they would pick up the right strength of that wind by 50 navigators who really knew the job, especially trained for that. And they'd pick it up in the main force, the navigators, the bars over the right to say, the navigator has a message. He'd read it, hey, the wind's 30 mile an hour. They might be doing it at 50 mile an hour, I don't know. So every now and again, my navigator and Pathfinder Force would give me these messages to send back to base. The only one regrettable thing about this one, saying that now, is this raid I was shot down on Dortmund, coming home, I was sending messages out, to my recollection, too many. You know, I sent about six messages, well, you're easily picked up, you know, on WTC, you're easily picked up on radar, and these fighters, German fighters. That could be one of the causes, I just don't know. But instead, that was the idea of the Pathfinder, which is a good thing. It was a good thing. It's like universal, isn't it? If you get people that doing the same thing, great. If you get different, all people doing different, we've got different ideas, you know. So I'll be sending more messages out on Pathfinders.
Now we'll come back to the Pathfinder work. But let's go back to 158 Squadron. You put, for the second operation on Duisburg, you turned back. Can you remember doing that?
Yes, I think it was pretty certain it was something to do with the engine trouble, engines overheating.